Anyways, today is the 1st of November 2019, which means it's the 3rd of, right, the 3rd of Marach Shavan, Tafshin Pei. And we are up to Musar Day of Perek Aleph of Devarim. And are you recording or are you just taking pictures? Hey. Recording too? Oh my gosh.
I just thought. I like how I got to the Musar Day. Because in the video, I thank Rabbi Gross for the Musar. But he's recording also, I don't throw.
Okay, so anyways, so I want to conclude. Yesterday was Halacha Day, but of course yesterday was the, we dealt with the mitzvah of Tochacha, right, the mitzvah of giving rebuke, and there is a sort of an ending to that shir, a sort of a halachic ending to that shir. It certainly fits within Musar Day. Now again, there's nothing over, this parak does not talk about the halachos of Musar. It's learned out from a pasuk that appears in Kedushin, in Kedoshim, Parshas Kedoshim, Hocheach Tochich Samisechem, Lo Tisa Alav Chet, that one should rebuke their fellow, and one should not bear the sin. Now it's a little bit of an odd pasuk, how to deduce and how to learn out all the different, you know, different parts of that pasuk, the other parts of the pasuk as well. So that is an interesting avoda. And where this sets up in terms of what we discussed yesterday, if you know the person's going to listen to you, if you don't know the person's going to listen to you, where the mitzvah, where exactly is that mitzvah? Maybe it's better not to give mussar if you know for sure that they're not going to listen to you. So there is a conclusion of the minchas chinuch here that is important. And he says, Lachorim ochel nevelos lahachas mechal shas oid avodah zara shemavur gabi avedu v'shar duchle de'enu b'chal achiv efshar de'en chiv lahochicho gam kein de'enu b'chal areyu. Now what about if a person is really a they violate prohibitions lahachis, because they really want to get back, they really have no interest in Shabbos there, they know what it is and they're still not doing it, and avodah zara, etc. So maybe there's no mitzvah, because the mitzvah of tochacha is for whose benefit? It's for your benefit, their benefit, God's benefit, whose benefit? So that perhaps there is an assumption it's for their benefit, and they'll improve off of it. So many of the benefits that come about as being part of the Jewish people gets lost if you fall into this category of a mumar lahacha, somebody who violates the halacha as a way of getting back at God, as a way of angering God. That's not that you don't know, it's not that you succumb to the Yetzirah, it's that you really had in mind that I want to violate this halacha. So there are, so you start losing things such as the mitzvah of a Shavas Aveda. So perhaps that is inapplicable if the person is a Mumer Lahachis, or the mitzvah of, there's a whole, last year's Model Beis Din that the Masechta is involved in, the Dr. Weiss, member of our shul, that he is involved in. So that was the case last year of a person whose sibling is, the case of a man died without children, leaving his wife, and he had a brother in the Soviet Union someplace, I think that was the case, and the brother is completely not religious at all, and anti-religious, and I don't want anything to do with this deal. So perhaps to the point, and they actually assume that might be the case of the halacha, that there's no obligation to track him down to do yibum, because he loses his status as being a member of the Jewish people. So the Minchas Chinuch, however, concludes and says, Ach mikol makom nearly dim safik etzol de'efshir shekavi menu chayv lo'chiyach de'yachzul lemuta v'yeh b'chlal ach. That maybe you should try to figure out a way for him to get back, and he would be included as an ach again. Not necessarily you're going to correct the behavior, but that at least you can get him back into the category of being one who will be in the realm of maybe accepting the behavior. That they could be included as a brother once again. They could be included as being a part of the member of the Jewish people again. Kainirali. That's his conclusion. So perhaps that is part of the when we think about the mitzvah of Musar. So sometimes it's not just necessarily to train people to be totally 100%. As we maybe would like them, but rather to get them at least back into the realm of being brothers once again, of being included in Ach and being included in Achinu B'nai Yisrael. And that perhaps will, if that's really the goal, that they will be once again Achim, so that is, that perhaps will include the Musar as well. There's the famous story of the Kloisenberger Rebbe, how he gave Musar, the famous, as he was in the camp, and is actually in the DP camps following the war. So the famous story goes is that he saw a girl walking around that he knew to be of Hasidish descent, and she wasn't wearing stockings. And he said, how could a Jewish Madelach not be wearing stockings? So she said, like, I don't have food to eat. You know, I lost all my family and all my, I have nobody, I have nothing, I have no food, and you're complaining that I'm not wearing stockings. To which he said, well, okay, it's not correct. And he took off his own stockings and gave it to her. So beyond the musr of, oh, how could it be that you're not dressed appropriately, but the fact that you're willing to contribute towards the effort in making things better, that it obviously enhances the tochacha and the effectiveness of that musr. So that's thought number one. Thought number two is just what's laid out that Rabbi Simon in the first mimer in Parshas, in Imrei Baruch and Devarim, so he spells out an interesting point. Not sure it would fall into Musar Day, but just an interesting hashkafic and didactic point over the course of this book. That the book of Devarim, that we've already noticed that there are some differences between, and the Mefarshim point out that there are differences between Devarim and the other four books of the Torah. The main difference being is that somehow it's different. That somehow the nevuah, the prophecy, the way that Moshe wrote it, and the way that Moshe said it, so that is it's different, right? That there's something different going on here. So what is that? So as the Or HaChaim said, Eim lehadvarim, these are the things to which Moshe said, as opposed to the things before which Moshe did not say. What do you mean? Moshe said plenty in the previous four books of the Torah. He says, well, that was sort of a direct nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem was saying it. Moshe yidaber. Sorry. Hashem yidaber. No, it's a different thing of a different Rasha. But that Hashem said it, and Moshe repeated it right away, that he was just saying over that which Hashem told him, and the assumption was that he was saying it in an exact way. So although it wasn't, you wouldn't say that Bnei Yisrael was receiving a nevuah, they were in effect receiving a nevuah. They were in effect receiving a direct message, a message from Hashem via Moshe Rabbeinu, right? A game of telephone as opposed to broken telephone. Right? The game of telephone is you're supposed to repeat exactly what the person is, as opposed to broken telephone where you're not. So this is telephone. And it was a direct statement coming forth from Hashem, as opposed to Devarim, where that's not the case. Now, there is actually a halachic distinction, a way that when we deduce halacha, learn out halacha from the book of Devarim, so there is an addition, there is something that is perhaps, so it's a bit of a machlokas in the Gemara, but perhaps there is a distinction between Devarim and the rest of the rest of the Torah. So what is that? So the Gemara tells us that the Gemara has a debate about whether we learn out smuchim or not, from the fact that there are psukim, or the fact that there are mitzvos next to each other. So does that mean that can we learn something out from the fact that that there are psukim, or that there are mitzvos, that there are sections that are right next to each other? Right, so that's a machlokas in the that the Gemara records. So v'amar Rav Yosef, and then Rav Yosef, however, adds in afilu man delo darish smuchim ba'alma b'mishnah Torah darish. But even according to those that don't generally darshan out smuchim, that don't generally try to figure things out from the fact that psukim are right next to each other, or subjects are right next to each other, in Devarim we do. Now, I would have thought I would have made the opposite case, right? That if Devarim is somehow like a lesser form of Nevuah, that it's Hashem told him something one thing and Moshe is coming back and giving it over the next day, so I would think that would be less likely that we should be darshaning things out, right? That's a less direct transmission. And therefore, how can we darshan something out from that if it's not as precise as the other four books of the Torah? So how does that how does that work? So perhaps the answer is that Moshe was beginning to embed the idea of Torah Shebal Peh, that the idea of learning out smuchim, the idea of learning out any of the Yud Gimel Midos, the Torah and Drashas Behem, but the specifically, so that's ways that we're supposed to learn Torah. But then the fact that there's an additional methodology for how to darshan out the psukim, what does that mean? What is the methodology of darshan out psukim? That means we're learning Torah Shebal Peh, right? That's the Baal Peh idea, the transmission of the Torah from one generation to the next, of how to figure these things out. So from the fact that Devarim has additional ways of deduction is an indication towards the beginning of Torah Shebal Peh. I have a friend that has been developing, he's been calling me for years already now, about his thesis about the challenge of Torah Shebaal Peh, that in fact is the challenge of the Jewish people to accept Torah Shebaal Peh and continue that deduction and to have the courage to be able to do so. The idea of Lo Vashamayim Hi is that B'nai Yisrael is demonstrating courage in terms of our own deductions from the Torah. So perhaps this is considered to be a step towards that. The fact that now Moshe is embedding more things and giving more hints, so that is the next step in the development of Torah. And in fact, he quotes here a statement from the Shem Yishmuel, which he quoted in the name of his father. Who is his father? Who is the Shem Yishmuel? So the Shem Yishmuel was the Sakachava Rebbe, right? His father was the Avni Nezer. What?
His father was the first.
His father was the first. I don't know the first or not. I'm not sure, but the Avni Nezer. The Avni Nezer is a very prominent posek, and he super genius, really very very creative. But then you also and in the world of learning, the Avni Nezer is appears in every base medrash, every base medrash, ever anywhere you'll have a copy of the Avni Nezer as well as the Igli Tal. For learning Hilchos Shabbos, the Igli Tal is one of the important works on the laws of Shabbos, so that's also by the Avni Nezer. So if you open up Rav Zevin's Svarim about Sipuri HaTzadikim, the stories of Tzadikim. There's a couple of art school books translated into English, the Hasidic tales of the Hasidic masters. So those are translations. That's not just the things that are made up. Those are translations from Rav Zevin. Rav Zevin was a super genius, a Chabad Chassid who lived in Eretz Yisrael. He wrote the Encyclopedia Talmudit. He was the first editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudit, which is a massive work. So he also put together these Hasidic stories, and so there are a couple stories there of the Avni Nezer and the Shem Yishmuel of them being what we picture a Hasidic Rebbe from 150 years ago being, like in the other world, meditating, floating in the air. All these are descriptions of the Avni Nezer. So, anyways, the Avni Nezer made a comment that this is the Parshas Devarim, Sefer Devarim is actually she emtsai ben Torah shebichsav l'Torah shebaal peh. That is the focal point, the center point, the transition of Torah shebichsav and Torah shebaal peh, and in fact, the idea of adding smuchim, those are the chidushim of Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Those are the chidushei Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had. So you learn Devarim very well, so that's learning, literally, Torah's Moshe. That's learning the way that Moshe wanted to present things. And then you have this, so how do we understand the rest of what's going on there? So that was the plan. The plan was originally, there's a famous comment of the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi has a drasha where he describes the difference between the first luchos and the second luchos. That the first luchos wouldn't have required a Torah Shebaal Peh. That it would have been so completely obvious we would be able to intuit everything. And the second luchos do require that. So we're in that second situation where we require that. But what does that even mean? So what?
The luchos.
Yeah, so that's what the Beis Halevi writes. This is a famous drasha of the Beis Halevi where he describes it. I think we might have quoted this in Shul and Shavuos. I think I heard Rabbi Ari Leibowitz tell this over, saying that when he was like high school or yeshiva bacher, very young, his brother got married. Someone got married. He had to speak at a Shema Brachos where like Reuven Feinstein was there, and he quoted this Beis Halevi. And Reuven Feinstein came to him and said, "So are you saying the luchos are different?" He's like, "I don't know. I'm just saying what the Beis Halevi is." But yes, yeah, so he had the same question. But yes, that's what the Beis Halevi says, black on white. But what could that possibly mean? So the way we could understand it is from the first luchos, the Torah was so clear that we knew exactly what it meant. So the mashal that he brings here is, for example, tefillin. So the Torah tells us that there has to be a sign on the osayidach v'ilutot tavos beninecha. So what does that mean? How do we know that the tefillin should be black, whether they even have to be black? Or that has to be square, that has to be boxes, and what parshios go in there? So we know that from Torah Shebaal Peh, that's the halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, we consider that to be transferred on. But if we would have had the first luchos, we wouldn't have even had to say that. It would just have been obvious what that means. I don't know what it means. But that's perhaps the mashal, the way to understand that idea. So we and that's also part of a challenge of emuna to take the Torah Shebal Peh as seriously as the Torah Shebichsav. There is a bit of a challenge involved with that, certainly to accept the words of the Rabbanim in the same way as the Rabbanim in a similar way. But that's perhaps what we're learning from this section. Okay. And then I want to give one more piece of Torah here. The Rav Henoch Leibowitz here quotes a Ralbag back from Bamidbar that we had at the end of this in the end of our parsha. Moshe seems to blame the chit of the Meraglim as to why he's not going into Eretz Yisrael, which is a bit problematic, because we know that Moshe is not going to Eretz Yisrael because if his chait by the so you have to give explanations to that. And he mentions, by the way, as well in the beginning of Parshas Va'aschanan, in not so long from now, in the very beginning, he talks about how much he wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael. Now he can't, and he says Va'yisaber Hashem bi l'manchem, that Hashem became angry. Moshe talks about how much he wanted to go in, and then says Hashem became angry because of you. V'lo shamalai, didn't listen to me. And Hashem said to me, Rav lach, al tosef to bari lai, o devar says. And Hashem said, it's too much for you, don't bother me anymore with this request. And that's sort of the end of Moshe's pestering at Kadosh Baruch Hu to let him into the land of Israel. What is Moshe saying? Leman chem, because of you. What do you mean because of you? Right? It was Moshe's hate. That's what keeps him out. So that's like sort of an ongoing question. What's going on? So he quotes the Ralbag here, that this was part of the punishment for Bnei Yisrael, that they were not going to go in. This is after the sin of the spies. Why? Because had Moshe gone in, they would have gone and destroyed the rest of the nations right away. But he didn't lead them in. And Yehoshua was a little slower in going and capturing the rest of the land. And in fact, because of that, he was never able to go ahead and conclude the task, which is something that haunts us throughout Shoftim and then the book of Shmuel, is that they never actually were able to cleanse the land. So the whole thing is ambiguous. What's going on here? So what the Rabag is saying, and this you have to work out, is that Moshe is not going in. That was part of the punishment to Bnei Yisrael by the sin of the Meraglim, is that you're not going to have Moshe leading you, because Moshe would have, it was you sort of tarried, and Moshe would have been very fast, and that would have solved every problem for the future. So that was in effect a punishment to Bnei Yisrael. Now how do you put that together with, it seems like Moshe was going to go in had he not hit the rock? I'm not sure I have a great answer to that. But Rav Henoch Leibowitz then continues on and discusses what is this idea, though, of using the language of v'nis'atzel b'melchamas ha'im, that Yeshua was nis'atzel, which literally means lazy. Lazy, L-A-Z-Y, that he just didn't move fast. What's going on? What is the idea of Zrizus here? And he answers, and Rav Henoch, this is sort of a Musar Sefer, he says, that even a small nekuda of Zrizus is important. We often think of that we have a mitzvah to do, and ideally we do it bezrizus. We do it as quickly as possible. What if you don't do it as quickly as possible? So okay, you still do the mitzvah, right? You just didn't do it as quickly as possible. It's sort of like an independent midah. And what he develops is that no, that's part and parcel with the mitzvah itself. If you're not going to do it bezrizus, there's going to be something lacking from the mitzvah. And that's what is indicated here. Had Moshe gone in with zrizus, they would have conquered everything right away. Had Yeshua did not, and not only did they not do it bezrizus, but they ended up not conquering everything. It ended up having an effect on the rest, on the quality of the mitzvah as well. So there is a which is actually someone asked me yesterday. Someone was about purchasing mezuzahs and was asked about, like, what's the difference in the different levels that you offer, mehudah, l'chachila, etc. So describing the difference, I was like, well, how does this work in terms of olam haba? Like, do I sort of get presented with, do I sort of get ranked differently if I had a different? I said, I'm not sure. I don't take any credit for that, but it does show a love of the mitzvah. I mean, people spend hours picking out their esrogim. So it makes sense also to spend hours picking out your mezuzahs. Now, people don't have the same attitude towards it. As somebody in the business said to me, he said, you have to realize tefillin for people is an investment. Mezuzahs for people is an expense. It's an interesting nekud. I mean, you see, I have a doors, I got to put a mezuzah on. Right? It doesn't have that same attitude. But that's all part and parcel with the mitzvah. So he has in Telushkin's book about the Rebbe, he has a chapter entitled "Anything Worth Doing is Worth Doing Now." That's something that the Rebbe pushed. So he has three stories here. One story I think we've told before about the this Chabad guy who was in Detroit, and if someone told him there that if you bring me tefillin, I'll put it on every day. So Chassid said, okay, fine. I'll be back here in 6 weeks. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I'll be back in 6 weeks. So I'll bring you a pair of tefillin. To which the guy said, fine. So he was a businessman. So he went on his way, and he was from London. So if he went from London to Brooklyn, said hello to the Rebbe, said, I'm on my way to Detroit for business. The Rebbe said, okay, bring me a report back about your business. So on the way, so he's figured it's Thursday, or Wednesday night, I think. He's on his way back to New York. He's going to give the Rebbe a report on the business, and he's going to go back to London and spend Shabbos with his family. So the Rebbe says to him, he tells him the business went great, and I happened to meet this Jew, and he said he'll put on tefillin, and I told him next time I'm in Detroit, I'm going to bring a pair of tefillin, he's going to put it on. So the Rebbe told him, he said, the letter was given back to him, and where is it here? Earlier the following morning, the Rebbe's secretary saw him, gave him the Rebbe the response. Concerning the business dealings, the Rebbe offered him a bracha, that everything should go well. With the tefillin, he said, do you think it's right that a Jew to put on tefillin yesterday for perhaps the first time in 20 years should wait 6 weeks for you to bring him a pair of tefillin? You should buy him the tefillin today. Then the Rebbe, aware that he wants to go home, he says, if you get the tefillin to the man in Detroit so that he can put them on today, do so. I mean, if you could just send them there, fine. But if not, you should get on a plane yourself and get there and bring him the tefillin. So he went, okay, the Rebbe said, so he went and bought a pair, went to LaGuardia Airport, found a Jew going on the plane, gave him the pair of tefillin, got it there, had his friend pick it up from the Jew, and got it to the person by Shabbos, and he was able to give a positive report to the Rebbe. The Rebbe said go. But then there's another story here. There's I think, four stories over the course of this chapter, and we're running out of time. We'll give, do you want number 2, 3, or 4?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
So story number two is there was somebody from South Africa who showed up in South Africa who was involved with the prisons there, where there were a lot of political prisoners during that time, the Jewish people that were in jail. So he told the Rebbe, he said, you know, things are difficult. They only give off from the labor, they only sort of recognize Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Pesach. They don't recognize anything else. So let me see if I could just pull that up. So the prison, right? Jews were excused from labor. Pesach, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and they also gave them special food. So what about what about Hanukkah? The Rebbe asked, "Are they going to light Hanukkah candles?" So he said that they're not. He says, "Do you realize how much a little bit of light would bring inspiration to these prisoners? Can you arrange them to light Hanukkah candles?" So he said, okay, I'll work on that for next Hanukkah. To which the Rebbe said, Hanukkah's next week. Right? Why are you worrying about this Hanukkah? So he says, well, I'm here, I'm not there. He said, you have permission to use the phone outside, call whoever you need to in South Africa in order to make sure that this gets done. So he said, well, that's fine, but it's 3 a.m. in South Africa. The Rebbe said, even better. Call up the person now and tell them and tell them that this is something that you need. So he so impressed by the words. So he what is the story here? So as soon as he left, he took him to a small office, showed him the phones, said make whatever calls you need. He called the secretary, got the phone number of the general Stefan, the person in charge of these things in the prisons, who happened to be a religious person himself, and he called the person up he had a secretary call him up, tell him to expect an international call in a few minutes, calls him back in a few minutes, Katz explained that he had just been meeting with a rabbi who was one of the leaders of the Jewish people, who has expressed tremendous concern about the Jews in South Africa's prisons. He explained how important it was that they be allowed to light Hanukkah candles, that doing so would bring them light and hope. To his surprise and relief, General Stefan answered that he understood, coming from overseas in the middle of the night, how urgent the matter was, and he promised that he would go into his office the next morning and make sure that word got out that all the prisoners should be given appropriate accommodations to be able to light Hanukkah candles, which I've been involved in the prison system a little bit. Not a simple thing to do. The following morning, when the Rebbe came, Rabbi Katz told him that I did my mission, everything went well. The Rebbe smiled broadly and said, okay, come back in a couple of hours. Okay, this time he came back. He said, I understand that New York is the state with the largest Jewish population. Jewish prisoners were not allowed to light Hanukkah candles. I'd like you to do something about that as well. And for the second time, Rabbi Katz was taken. He said, first of all, it's December 24th, and Hanukkah is in a few hours, and it's also December 25th in a few hours. And I know who to call in South Africa. I don't know who to call in New York. I said, don't worry about it. I'll put you in touch with somebody who will tell you who to call. He pulled someone out of a Hanukkah party, a Christmas party, who answered. He said, somebody here is very concerned, etc. And he said, well, if you are going to pull me out of a party like this, I recognize that it must be very important to you. We'll make sure that it happens. Now, the truth is a little bit of a problem. I would have said, if I was this guy, is this an emergency, unplanned Jewish holiday that you didn't know about before? But anyways, the Rebbe was able to see that this person was able to call with the appropriate amount of urgency, and he'd be able to get the job done. One more story here with Frank Lattenberg, who became senator of New Jersey, right? So apparently he was the chairman of the UJA. So apparently he met with the Rebbe once. And the Rebbe pressed him about pushing financial support for Jewish schools and aid for Jews in other countries, that the UJA is not doing enough. So he said, all right, I'll start working on it tomorrow. To which the Rebbe said, well, if you start tonight, it will happen. And he said, well, it's not something that could be done overnight. He says, why not? He says, what do you mean, how do I know? So the Rebbe said, no, at least give yourself the benefit of the doubt. Try to get to work tonight, then you'll see what happens. He says, how do I do it tonight? He says, you have a secretary, call her up and get started. And now we don't know the end of the story. He concludes that. But I'll just give one more story that is available. You can check it out on YouTube. Just Google Bibi Netanyahu, Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it's not the main movie that people point to, but but there's another one where apparently when Netanyahu was a UN chief, he has a whole story that he tells in one video. But there's a different video where he actually went to do dollars by the Rebbe. There's a video of him going and taking the dollar from the Rebbe. And the Rebbe said to him, knew what's going on. What's going on at the UN? He says, we're working on things. The Rebbe says to him, and what are you doing to bring Mashiach? Straight up, what are you doing to bring Mashiach? He says, yeah, we're doing things, And the Rebbe said, yeah, but what are you doing today to bring Mashiach? And he said, okay, we're working on things, whatever. But the video sort of ends at that point. But everything should be, anything worth doing should be done today, and perhaps that's the message being taught by the distinction between Moshe and Yehoshua. All right, so with that, we have a good Shabbos, and next week, Yemir Tzoshem, we're on to Perek Beis.